Carter Newell.
Yeah.
Carter's going to bring us up to date on Muscle Park. 35 years, maybe?
Well, it was since 1980s, 40 years. And I look, and there's Sam Chapman. He's been around for 50 years. So, longevity, and Bill Mook, of course. So, you know, I wanted to take half of my, well, 1 minute of my time to say, basically, in aquaculture, if you don't do technology transfer, it takes you 20 years to figure it out, and then 20 years to implement it, right? So with the oysters, we're 20 years to figure it out, and then we're well down in the implementation side of things. With mussels, we started growing mussels on ropes around the late 1990s, and we're just about towards the implementation phase, about 20 years. With scallops, they were smart. They went right to Japan, and they saved themselves at least 10 years, right? So basically, the take-home message is, if you're trying to develop a new species, it's going to take a while. And the reason why we have this room full of people, if you were here 20 years ago, there was no profitable industry. Therefore, nobody was really interested in aquaculture. Oysters were the first to come along. You see a lot of oyster people. Mussels are starting to come along. Seaweed is starting to come along. And then scallops will eventually. But the key thing is, the agenda for everybody should be really driven by these bottlenecks that lead to profitability. So if it's washing lantern nets to make scallops, that's got to be the top research agenda. And when you look at Paul Dobbins traveling around the world, the reason why these people are successful is the whole government and research agenda starts with the bottlenecks in the industry. That's where it starts. So when I see a slide and it has Sea Grant or it has the nonprofits in the middle, it should be the industry. And what we have to do is develop leadership within the industry so that we can make that happen. So it's not actually up to those guys, it's up to all of you in the audience to bring your needs up to the top. And then you'll be looking at a full room of people. Okay. So basically, our goal is, in 10 years, is to get to 15 million annually, but that's not with market expansion. And what you see on the right is one of the mussel ropes hanging down. We've now been able to achieve 500 pounds of rope. When we first started research, it was about 100. So that's really good. And what you see on the bottom left is the first six of our submersible mussel rafts that we've been developing. Mussels are good for you, of course. Good source of vitamins. And I just made this graph recently and realized that farm mussel CO2 equivalents are really, really low compared to other types of food. Also, you know, if you guys know Heavy Dagger, he's been working on the offshore wind, we realized we could grow mussels on windmills. We could feed the entire world without using any energy or water. But they get sick eating mussels every day. They're also really good for water quality, and that's why I got into shellfish farming. It's an economic argument for clean water. And Bill could tell you, when we formed MAIC years ago, our job was to develop 1,000 jobs in our sector. So we have these altruistic motives. I don't know why, but that's what we do. A typical story, just like what you saw, is that most of the mussels come from elsewhere. So, you see that big 30 million pound PEI? We're ready.
I hope so.
Okay, GeoMRI did a great service to the industry, and they looked in pretty good detail to what the potential rope-grown market by 2030 is, and they came up with about $15 million. So that's good if you're in an industry where you're growing $500,000 and you're saying, okay, I've got $15 million to put my eye on, and you can show it to investors. That's a really good thing. So thank you, GeoMRI, for that. Maine has a lot of semi-exposed areas, but what I wanted to mention is, if you're in front of a lawyer's house in Blue Hill Bay and you go for a 100-acre farm, get ready for some shit to happen. But if you're out 5 miles out in the middle of the bay and nobody can see you and you get along with a lobsterman and you want to grow a million pounds, you've got opportunities there, but you have to deal with the exposure. Okay, so there's a real opportunity now, and as you can see in some of Paul Dobbins' slides, that we're going to be going out in these areas because if we want to grow a lot of stuff, that's really the only place to grow it. So we have to deal with new technologies like how to submerge stuff and how to get anchors to hold and that kind of thing. So we've been through the eider duck issue, and I don't know about those little nets that they showed from Sweden, but those ducks, I know, dive down to at least 50 feet. And we fed millions of ducks. So we've gone to the rafts, and it's like the Kames fish farming idea. It was a 30-ton raft. Now we're up to about 70 tons on a larger raft. Long lines is the most efficient, but then, as you say, you get ducked. And bottom culture, we did a lot of that in the past, but it's not really sustainable because you're dragging up all the seed and then you're getting clam diggers and worm diggers are mad at you. So I'm going to let Damien talk about this, but just let you know that we've been getting some nice support from both NSF and Sea Grant. We've realized that we can use satellites to look at one day was cloud-free, you might get 1 or 2 days, and you can look at the whole coast of Maine, and that tells you a lot about which areas are productive, what you can grow there, and also why these areas are productive. And what happens is with satellites, you get everywhere on one day. And then with these buoys that we've been using on the CNET for 5 years, you get continuous data hourly, but only in 5 places. So we've done this for 5 years, and if you want to talk to Damien and I later or come to my session on mussels, we can tell you why these areas are productive and which areas are good for what species. This is what we've come up with some of the funding. The green areas are where you get the most rapid mussel growth. So this is just one image from the Penobscot Bay up to about Goldsboro Bay, and the green areas are, if the conditions were like that for a month, where mussels going to grow the fastest. We've done these for oysters and two species of oysters, and we're doing some work in Alaska now with that as well, because Alaska is a big area and you don't have a skiff fast enough to cover all those places. We can also do some modeling, which I can talk to people more about, but that gives you the actual production you can get in the farm, but you need to combine the continuous data of a whole year's worth of food and temperature with the flow on the bottom to understand how many, because they're filter feeders, and if the water isn't flowing, you're going to have a shadow of no food around. But there's a match between the supply of food and the demand based on, and that match is really important in any kind of operation. When we talk about R&D, and people usually think, well, the research will lead to development, but the research part, and this is from Europe, but the first 4 or 5 steps are like the tank studies, the research, that kind of thing. But actually 6, 7, 8, and 9 is where you actually get out in the ocean and you try and grow a business on this new technology. And this is what they call the valley of death right at the bottom, where your funds are over, you're out there, and then a storm comes and you wipe it out and you've got no money. So getting through that valley of death is really important, because what happens at the end is you have the jobs that come out of that. So we can't just fund this front end. We have to really be thinking about what are the outcomes that we want and how can we prevent this valley of death. And so like we did, we've been through this whole process, and I was able to not eliminate the valley of death by having groups like MTI, CEI, Department of Agriculture, and a little bit of luck, and a bunch of good fishermen who knew how to weld, and luckily I'm a commercial diver, so I could retrieve stuff. So we've been through that, and we've gone through a $1.5 million commercialization, and we're meeting our metrics and our business plan, so go team. And this is some of like the early end R&D stuff, has to do with flow 3D and materials, and submersion modeling, some of the construction work, looking at the biology and the oceanography and the business side of everything, seed collection, performance and yield. Commercialization, which really a big part of that is going to Italy and getting bagging stuff so we can do 3,000 pounds an hour and processing 3,000 pounds an hour at sea so that you can bring in enough to make a profit. Because if you go along and you don't make a profit, why do it? And this is a slide when they talk about workforce development. This is where all the fishing boats are. So they're in Cumberland, Knox, and Hancock and Washington County. So this is our workforce, these people out there. So whatever you can grow within a 20-minute steam or a half-hour steam of those areas are where your people are. And it's not going to be your typical STEM education. It's going to be more experiential, hands-on training like they have in New Zealand, where each industry says, I need 25 tasks, and that becomes the agenda. So let's see. Chris, did I screw up? What did I do here? Next. All right. So I guess in summary, it's a technology that's really key to making profitable business enterprise. So we really should be focusing on that. The sector point of view, eider ducts are really what's keeping us in terms of our efficiency of using longline technology, but for now we haven't solved it. Red tides are becoming more of an issue.
Automation predator net cleaning would be really nice to have. Automation of submerged systems would be good. We don't really know if ocean acidification is going to be in a 5 or 10 year horizon, but will it eliminate the possibility of collecting wild seed? And if it will, we better really think about hatcheries. But for now, we're putting out one rope and catching two million mussels on one rope, so it's really not cost effective to go into a hatchery. But in 10 years from now, if there's no mussels out there, we need to know that now. Come to my session to learn more about optimizing seed collection, site selection, and production technology. And just as true in all of aquaculture, value-added products will double jobs and value in the sector. So that 15 million I was saying could actually be 30 million if we do the value-added. So I think, you know, use of husbandry questions from growers as a guide to research. That's kind of my take-home message. And we'd like to learn more about our mussel growing areas, and I'm so happy that we have people like Damien and Dave Townsend here who are telling us a lot about the oceanography of inshore waters. And collaborate. Thank you.